Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of reimaginedonline.org, covering the stories in the new world of public education. On this episode, Reimagined's executive editor, Matt Ladner, talks to Emily Ann Gullickson, president of A for Arizona, a nonprofit dedicated to closing the achievement gap and modernizing schooling in the Grand Canyon State. The two talk about A for Arizona's focus on developing new methods for families in need to access different transportation options. The one-size-fits-all model of the yellow school bus was developed before World War II, not sufficient for the modern world of diverse options. How can better access to transportation lead to greater student equity? That question and more on this episode of Podcast Ed. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Reimagined podcast. And I'm happy to say that our guest today is Emily Ann Gullickson, the president of A for Arizona. And we're going to talk about a few different things today, but mostly about school transportation, which is something that, we've been writing about on Reimagined. And I think we're going to be writing about a lot more. Emily Ann, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about A for Arizona for viewers who may not be familiar.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me on the show today. We are all about empowering and ensuring that every child has access to a high quality school and learning environments with a focus on those living in high poverty communities. We do a lot in policy work. We have the privilege of working with Dr. Ladner here on the ground in Arizona and really have embraced modernizing schooling in the last year. We have a great expansion and innovation fund that solely exists to seed ideas that may not have proof points yet. We know that we launched from a Shark Tank competition in order to get A for Arizona off the ground. So it's in our blood to think outside the box and make student-centered solutions our top focus. And to seed ideas that we may not have a whole bunch of results yet, but they're working for kids, they're in demand by parents, and we want to enable more of that.
Great. And I think it's safe to say that your organization is most famous for helping schools replicate in high need areas, right? And that this is not just charter schools, but also high demand district schools. Right.
Yeah, we also have some private school partners. So we're agnostic to school type, but we have found the most entrepreneurial minded school leaders around the state and figure out how can you grow your impact, replication, expansion, new models, teaching others how to do what you do. And our theory of action is all about scaling what works and making sure folks know what's possible. And being able to quickly scale those best proof points so that more kids have access to high quality learning opportunities now and not years from now. We are appreciative of people that are taking on school improvement, but for us, we very much learned from the business community here of replicating what works.
Great. All right. So transportation over the last few weeks has become a very hot topic.
I know.
The governor of Massachusetts, of course, called out the National Guard to have guardsmen start driving school buses. There are reports around the country about delayed school openings, kids being stranded at bus stops, you know, like kids not getting to school on time. I read a story here in Arizona about, you know, they went out to the field where the district kept their buses, and there was, you know, it's like a whole field of buses sitting there when they, because they lacked drivers. So I know you worked on this, this topic during the last Arizona legislative session. So tell us what you've been up to.
Yeah, great. So we've all known transportation barriers have been real, but the pandemic certainly illuminated and exacerbated a lot of those problems. Our one-size-fits-all yellow school bus approach worked in the 1930s when it was established. A lot has changed. And as we are the home to autonomous vehicles and cutting-edge technology, and also robust educational options for kids and families. This one theory of action for how to move kids across the greater Phoenix metro and the state, especially in our rural and remote communities, it's not working. And so we really wanted to lean in and really listen from the ground. AFE Arizona had focus groups last fall with parents, focus groups with school principals and directors, focus groups with system leaders around what are those problems and barriers, but more importantly, what are those solutions, right? What are those things that our funding formula has restricted you from being able to do? Because newsflash across the country, those wonky formulas are solely baked on ridership, mileage, or some combo of the two. And so it really, we heard that some leaders have been, punished for being effective and innovative because it left money on the table. So we really did what AFE Arizona always does. We started with the willing and taking all those ideas and really embracing community-driven solutions, right? You know this, Ladner. I grew up in Minnesota, way northern Minnesota, northern Michigan. You can use a snowmobile to get to school, which is actually safer if you've ever driven through that part of town in January with snowbanks. But we certainly wouldn't be advocating for that here in the desert. And so that local context really matters, right? At the end of the day, we want to empower kids and families to be able to choose options that best will help them thrive. And these arbitrary roadblocks, right, where particular families don't have the same means and transit options, those barriers need to be removed, right? And so we really took what we heard from those focus groups and put together a multi-tiered approach that Governor Ducey ultimately championed in a driving equity campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a very unique context here in Arizona. About 67% of the kids live here in the Phoenix metro area. More than half of them don't go to their zone district school, right? Mm-hmm. So, when you think about the old system of we drew attendance boundaries and people more or less all went to their zone district school, that system had a lot of problems with it, but it made transportation really easy. Right? You had an attendance boundary, and then you ran buses in the attendance boundary, right? Mm-hmm. Things have become a lot more complicated since then. But
even in the same household, I think is to point out, you yourself and many of our colleagues have youth that are in multiple models, even within the same school district, right? One child is flourishing at the traditional campus, one's flourishing at the STEM campus, one's at the high school coding campus, right? That's really designed to their needs. So even in the same house on the same block, right? We're seeing mobility needs and access points that vary widely.
Right. So why do you think we got to this point where, school districts have had not open schools and just had these really severe problems this fall? What do you think the factors were that kind of led up to that? Was it going on before COVID? Is it strictly a COVID thing or is it a combination?
I think it's both. We certainly know of highly paid offers by large companies like Amazon that are quickly poaching up CDL drivers, right? Those certification levels are timely, cumbersome with bureaucratic red tape, and make it really hard to access quickly, right? So that takes a lot of time. Also, age of drivers with the scare of the pandemic, you certainly saw that shift. But I think a lot of the major transportation barriers go back well before the pandemic, right? Where you really haven't been encouraged to think differently because of how the funding formula has been, right? To recognize that a high demand campus with a lot of open enrollment students may need multiple transit options. Maybe, you and I have looked deeply at ridership, right? It's working for 40% of the students are able to still use the yellow bus. We're certainly not saying get rid of it altogether, right? But What about the other 60%? What else can we do to ensure that every family that's either already attending that campus or ones who really want to get there are able to have that transportation support as well? And so we've seen numbers declining across the country, but of course here in Arizona, those numbers are really clear, and you've got newfound safety concerns definitely coming up from families about changes in ridership in public transit as well. So how do we start to rethink and also enable and encourage collaboration across community-based organizations, local governments, tribal communities, entrepreneurs, business leaders who have cutting-edge technology, new types of K-12 ride sharing, other options where collaboration leads to success for all parties at the table. We just have really siloed, unfortunately, based on how we've funded our schools to really have to figure this out on their own. And some districts are larger and have a robust transportation team, but we've certainly been able to talk to some smaller schools where they are playing both principal, superintendent, and transit director. So that quickly adds up. And so I think that the pandemic's really empowered us to think differently, right? One, out of need, and two, because it's been long overdue.
Yeah, I've looked at some ridership data from here in Arizona recently, and there's a national set of data, and there's some state data. They differ in detail, but they both point in the same direction. And the direction is that yellow bus ridership in Arizona was going down substantially even before COVID-19. Mm-hmm. It looks like it, you know, in 2012, it may have been almost half, you know, of public school students riding the bus. Maybe not, you know, it depends on the source. But the most recent numbers, which were from 2019, was around 23%, right? So
what about the other 70 plus?
Well, right. Yeah. Now here in Arizona, we finance school bus transport through a separate property tax, right? So we all pay for it, but smaller and smaller percentage of our kids are getting to use it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, did you... you know, when Governor Ducey raised this topic, you know, was there debate? Was there opposition to sort of, you know, creating some alternatives?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a lot of feelings about empowering families to be able to truly access the different options that I think a lot of folks that have been facing student enrollment declines saw that if families, especially working class and low income communities, were empowered to make a different choice, they would do it. And so there was a lot of hostility around this particular bill. It was moving at the same time as a massive open enrollment bundle. And people really saw that if it's even easier to get into a public school and then you empower families to be able to take advantage of that and go there, that they will. And so, yes, on high levels.
So I remember some very creative arguments against the open enrollment bill. The open enrollment bill basically would have, it did pass, right? Would require district schools, and for context, open enrollment kids outnumber charter school kids, despite the fact that we have like the largest charter school sector in the country. We're almost 22% of the kids.
Yep.
There's more open enrollment kids by a wide margin here in the Phoenix area than there are charter school kids.
Yeah, so hundreds of thousands of students.
Right. I mean, it is, you know, sometimes I've told people that in the School Choice Justice League in Arizona, that it's actually school districts that are Superman, and that charter schools are Batman, and private choice is more like Robin, right? Now, yeah. Robin sometimes saves the day. Don't get me wrong. Robin's important, right? So the open enrollment law basically was going to require district schools to run a lottery, line, more or less, that, you know, we've been doing with charter since the beginning. And some of the creative, you know, talking points I heard against that was that somehow this was going to increase segregation in schooling. Was that same argument made against the transportation bill, or it all got a little confusing to me?
Yeah, there was some merging in arguments. A lot of it was trying to suggest that students wouldn't be safe if we didn't use the yellow school bus. But everyone I've talked to has shared that time that they were bullied or watched a fight or were intimidated on a school bus. Some of the points raised, of course, were around, you know, how can we ensure that students safely can get to school if it's not through this yellow bus approach? You know, we have to look back at history, though. This central solution of the yellow school bus was in 1938 or 39, right? Pre-World War II for us in America. And so a lot looks different. And so while we can acknowledge safety statistics are absolutely quite high in a nationally painted yellow school bus, an 80 passenger bus driving around the northern Grand Canyon landscape when there's snow outside isn't exactly necessarily the only solution, right? And when we look at carpools that are already happening, right? Suggestions that kids would be endangered if they participated in a carpool. Just, it was a lot of fear-based opposition around what might happen. We certainly weren't driving at equity and fair solutions that would harm children. That's a top priority, right? But we also have to look at one child taking multiple bus routes for 2 hours one way to get to the school where they can best flourish and have their needs met. And then another 2 hours home, that's not putting the child first, right? And so from those focus groups, we heard from families about better solutions that they would feel really safe putting their child in order to get to school. And school leaders said, I know how unsafe this is for some of my students. I wish we could do more. Here's what we would want to do if we were allowed to. And so it's that time where we have to have that community conversation about what 2021 technology and transportation looks like, and how do we catch up our schools? Because a lot of our other transportation modalities are already implementing a lot of this technology and ways to move people around cities and communities. We can't leave our 5-year-olds to 18-year-olds without options that are still safe.
Yeah, I calculated recently, like I said, like, you know, what if you were a middle schooler living at the address of the Arizona State Capitol, right, on Jefferson Street in downtown Phoenix? And if you could travel 3 miles to get school, you had 5 options. If you could travel 6 miles, and by 6 miles, I mean 6 miles round trip, okay, you had 19 middle school options, right? And of these 19, you were likely to be able to access bus, you know, yellow bus service to one, right? Now, it happened to be the lowest rated school by, you know, both on academics and by community ratings, right? So I think you put your finger on something very important. This obviously is a student equity issue, right? We don't want to have, you know, choice for those who can drive and everyone else is, well, you know, good luck.
Well, right? And yeah, and to that point, we haven't wanted to say out loud who has transit means and options and who doesn't. And so, you know, choice is not choice if you can't get there. And we really focused on public school students. Other states may choose to look at additional options, but We have these so many options that are free and should be accessible if that is the right fit for your child's unique needs. And ignoring the blind eye as to who has mobility access and who doesn't, it can't go on because it was exacerbated during the pandemic. And in order to empower every child to have the chance to create the greatest value and be our next local and state leaders, if they need to enroll in a different public option where they will be safe and supported and be able to thrive, then we should be able to help them get there, especially, as you said, because we're paying taxes for them.
Right. So I've had some people ask me, Emilia, like, because if you think about this from the standpoint of a district school that's taking a lot of kids through open enrollment or a charter school, I know that my oldest son went to a charter school that had kids coming from 30 miles away, right? And I don't think most people appreciate this. The old-fashioned bus system doesn't work for that, right? You can't run a bus. Bus systems worked well when you had compact geographic areas, right? So I've had people ask me, well, what can you do? Like, what do solutions look like? And I know that you've got kind of a competitive grant program going. So people are going to try to figure this stuff out from bottom up, right? But yeah. What kind of ideas are people, cooking up out there in the field?
Yeah, it's really exciting. So we can't announce finalists yet because the grant window is still open. But some of the ideas that have been discussed are some are exploring partnering up with community-based organizations where they have small buses or white fleet vehicles, certified drivers who already have background clearance with kids. A lot of them already know them. So hypothetically, some examples were around church partners, Boys and Girls Club, YMCAs, and the certified drivers for those vehicles cost 3 to 4 times less than a CDL licensed driver. So already access to current drivers. And a lot of them shared that their collaborative community-based organization, those vehicles sit idle Monday through Friday during the school hours. And they're already trusted by families and community and usually have a relationship with schools, right? And kids actually go there after hours or on the weekends. So that's a really neat approach where you're drawing in multiple constituencies around a solution. There's some great cities that are thinking through real access, right? What would happen if a student was able to utilize public transit year round? They could get to that apprenticeship. They could get to that CTE course. They could get to that job and still make it to school. And it wouldn't cut off just because the school year ended, right? We've heard a lot about Learn Everywhere. We've heard a lot. We championed a seat time flexibility law this year that really enables students and empowers them to have meaningful learning experiences outside of those four walls of the classroom. So how are we going to get them there, right? We had leaders grappling with bus shuttles, much like ASU and other universities take advantage of, to their micro schools and learning hubs where they're empowering their students. They saw great success, for example, with middle schoolers. And they were like, how can we keep these micro schools and learning hubs going in the evenings so that students are getting that social support with their peers and also recognizing that not everyone's going to be on the same bell schedule moving forward. We heard about from some of the rural areas, the value of empowering families to actually have a stipend to drive themselves. Some of them are coming in on dirt roads and they recognize the wear and tear for families and the time commitment. So part of the driving equity bundle was around empowering our district and charter schools to either use their current funding or apply for a grant to build that infrastructure. And the neat part is we don't usually give them credit, but hats off to New Jersey because they've been leading on this solution for decades. And my friends at Jersey Can, like, super grateful for you because really here in Arizona now, a public school can give that stipend to a family. They can drive their child directly. They can run carpool, right? Think about, for those who care about the environment, not having five cars all going to the same spot, right? Being able to rotate parent shuttle. They can utilize a K-12 ride sharing company. There's some awesome options now that are actually started by teachers and by parents. So high background fingerprint clearance, right? But are really focused on that youth, especially foster youth, homeless youth, the ones that usually are the aftermath when we're thinking about transit loops. We have a few folks that are working collaboratively with their local city partners around some circuit loops, right? Where there's large home developments underway and home developers at the table. What would happen if you could market your house and say, you're part of this neighborhood and we have access to seven amazing public schools near us. We're going to just pick up the students from the neighborhood and run a loop. Vail led on this, of course, as they always do. But we're starting to see more energy and solutions there. And one thing that's unique in the Arizona context, we don't really talk about it, but as is the case with funding across the country, a lot of times students within 1 to 2 miles of the school aren't funded, right? Well, the reality is it's like 110 degrees here for a large chunk of the school year. And right. so then we wonder why there's attendance problems with middle school and high schoolers, right? It's hot. So some folks are trying to think about better bus stops. Could we leverage a bike fleet? Could we leverage some scooter fleets that sound silly, but if that can cut travel time and enable students that might historically not have wanted to always come to school, they can do that. The great part about these grants is you can target a small number of students or take a system-wide approach, a single high demand campus where, like you said, they've got kiddos coming from all sorts of zip codes. And it's really meant to be locally driven. Like, listen to your parents, hear what they want. Some of the proposals, they're looking at multiple options so that all segments of families can really be enabled to have real transit options. Others are saying, you know, this is working for 70, 80% of our families. We just want to target this group because they ride the longest. They have cost the most. We think this solution will help us cut the transportation budget in half, cut ridership in half so that kids have more time learning, less time in commute. So what's really neat is that people are really being clear of, like, this is our biggest problem and this is how we want to solve it. And we haven't given them that runway before. It sounds so silly, but when you don't have permission, right, we stifle innovation. And again, here we are championing, getting all this national recognition for leading the way in tech and autonomous vehicles and transit in other modalities. But it's really exciting to see school leaders, community partners leaning in and saying, we want to do this and provide those proof points of what's possible and what meets parent demand, right? So that more kids can have access to that school that's the right fit.